This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon, it's Meera Sivasuthi. Welcome to the show. According to the World Health Organization, on a worldwide scale, one foot gets chopped off every 30 seconds. One of the leading causes of amputations is type 2 diabetes and improper wound care management. Dr. Hari Krishna Nair, President of the Malaysian Society of Wound Care Professionals in Malaysia, tells me more. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hari. How are you today?
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Fine. Dr. Hari, how does diabetes sort of lead to limb loss and ulcers?
Usually what happens is diabetes actually is a multi-organ disease itself. Mm-hmm. So what it is, one of the things actually affects the nerves. They call it neuropathy. So what happens is you have got numbness, insensate feet and all that. At the same time, there's also a lot of motor loss. You have a bit of autonomic neuropathy where it becomes dry and all that. And then you have got problem with the vessels itself. So decreased blood supply, causing it to get gangrenous, ischemic gangrenous and all that. And then it ends up being amputated. And okay. Most of the time it's because, you know, people don't look after the feet.
Yeah. Just to, you know, go back a little, there is apparently an alteration in the skin tissue before the leg ulcers actually develop. Could you just explain to me what's happening or what has led to the alteration in the skin tissue?
Okay. Usually what happens is when you have diabetes per se, this neuropathic condition itself, you have got sensory, which affects the sensation. You've got motor neuropathy, which affects the muscle, basically, and autonomic neuropathy. Autonomic neuropathy is when you have got decreased sweating and all that, so it makes it dry, mm-hmm. and the skin starts to crack. At the same time, at least about 42% of the collagen is also lost. So it's diminishing that legs itself. So that actually is supposed to be important because in terms of wound healing and all that, it helps to heal the ulcers and all that. So what happens is their feet is now dry, there is no moisture, it cracks up, you can have fissures, and then because of pressure over the leg, mm-hmm. especially if you don't offload the leg or anything, you start ending up with calluses or hardened skin and all that. Now all this alteration of skin, which actually breaks down, and when it breaks down, you got infection, you actually got bacteria all over the body, so it just goes in, and then because of their immune status, they're actually immunocompromised. That means the, what do you call it, they have got the antibodies but not functioning well, or there's a decrease in the antibody itself, so they get infections very easily.
Mm-hmm. And you are the tissue is deprived of oxygen?
Tissue, if deprived of oxygen, is hypoxia. That's different.
Okay.
That one basically usually is like if you have like, you know, smokers and all that in diabetes and all that, then they have decreased oxygenation. But usually what the other thing they have is ischemia. That means decreased blood supply.
Okay.
That's one thing.
Right, to the heart and things like
yes.
that as well. What kind of foot and leg sore prevention methods should be practiced by a diabetic patient? And, you know, maybe you want to just go one step back as to why diabetes brings about these limb amputations, because is there a way of, as I said, preventing it, and what is it that causes amputation? Is it because people are very lax when it comes to controlling their diabetes levels and they sort of take it for granted that, you know, they will be all right? Is that one of the main reasons?
Yeah, because the thing is, most people, I think, they're not informed about their condition itself. Mm-hmm. We always prefer them to know what diabetes is about. And if you can see now, we have already reached alarming rates. About 20% of the population is diabetic.
Yep, and in fact, based on rates, it's 58% on last year's rates.
58%?
Yeah, is that too high?
No, that is too high, because that'll be like more than half the population. We will actually beat every other country in the world.
I was wondering myself. I'm thinking, God, that will be a huge problem for
it's
us.
Huge.
Actually.
I think 58% could be some other, I mean, be those who develop complications.
Okay.
Because per se, if you say, like even what we have mentioned about World Health Foundation telling that it's like every foot being
seconds.
Every 30 seconds,
yeah.
That was in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
In 2011, the International Working Group on Diabetic Foot found out that it's 20 seconds. Now. So,
we're not,
so it's getting worse. So it is becoming worse, and the problem is people are not actually bothered so much about the feet. That's why usually when I give lectures, I have a nice slide showing their feet going for a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
They only do manicure and pedicure, but they actually don't assess the feet. Now, all diabetics, you have got these complications. Neuropathy is a very common thing, and they don't feel anything. So what you have to do is every night before you sleep, you check your feet. If your spouse cannot check it for you, you use a mirror, put it under the feet itself, mm-hmm. especially the lower part of the feet, you check. Make sure there is no cuts, make sure there is no ulcer, make sure there is no wound, make sure the skin is okay. And then you have to actually apply lotions or even like, you know, so like, you know, collagen lotions or even normal lotions and all that, baby oils and all these things help. And you have to apply it on top and at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
not in between the toes, because in between toes you get fungal infections.
Right.
But you must also check in between the toes, because if they have a fungal infection, it starts going in, and once it's deep enough, the bacteria comes in, and people have even been amputated because of that. And then the thing is, there is no pain. Like Paul Brand says, one of the best gift I've got to mankind is pain. When you have pain, you go and see a doctor. Mm-hmm. You do something about it. So when you have no feeling whatsoever, even if the reflexologist is going to massage you like beyond belief, you will have no pain because the whole foot is numb. So when they get a wound or ulcer, they only find out the wound is there when they get the smell, mm-hmm. or when there's a lot of exudate or a lot of discharge coming from the wound itself.
Right.
So they don't check.
Which is obviously too late.
Yep.
Very much late already. Mm. Are type 2 diabetics more prone to limb amputation?
Yes.
Why
because
is that?
The thing is, in type 2 diabetes itself, you find that there is downregulation of receptors. So the sugar levels are high. And when sugar levels are high, they affect the nerves, they affect the blood vessels, mm-hmm. they affect the immune system. So I always call them the three, pathies. Basically, neuropathy, immunopathy, vasculopathy.
Mm-hmm.
So it affects all three aspects of that. And you find that type 2 diabetics, basically, one thing is, even though they control the sugars well, they can minimize the complications, but they cannot completely negate the complications. So that's why you find that for the feet, they have to assess. Foot assessment is very important because in 1998, David Armstrong came out with a study which showed that this is the only complication whereby you can prevent by 85%.
Mm-hmm.
Renal failure, dermopathy, all the other functions, even retinopathy for the eye and all these things cannot be prevented under that aspect.
All brought about by diabetes, but this,
yes.
if detected, is 85% successful.
Yes.
Wow. Why is it people don't pay attention then? Is it just awareness?
It's not important. And the thing is, like, you know, they always feel that that's not important and all that. And the same food has been used all this while until the end of time. They find that, you know, that's not much of an importance there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, even when you get married, the normal terms of marriage and all these things, what do? They look at the face, they look at the hands. They never look at the feet. So I always tell them, now please, you don't want on the first night he suddenly pulls out a prosthetic limb and, you know, he's already got baloney amputation. So you never know.
That's very good advice. For patients who have developed a foot ulcer, I mean, what is the risk of developing further ulcers?
Okay, once they have a foot ulcer, it all depends on the etiology itself or the causative factor. If it's a thing caused by vascular problem, that means the blood supply is low, you must go to the vascular surgeon fast. He needs to correct it either by a bypass or breathing stent or an interventional radiologist to actually do angioplasty for it.
Mm-hmm.
If not, he doesn't assess both the feet. You find that if he's got a peripheral vascular disease in either foot, it can be both the feet, number one, and it's because it's systemic, it can also affect the heart. That is why you go to the aspect of rule of 50. That means if you amputate one limb, the other limb, there's a 50% chance of being amputated.
Okay.
And within a 5-year period, 50% chance of you dying. But the actual fact is 68% of them actually end up dying after that.
Right.
So
okay.
Usually it's a very high level itself.
Is it something that's worrying you at the rate we're going as far as limb amputation is concerned?
Yeah, because you'd be surprised. Because the thing is, like, you know, we are already at 20% of diabetes per se. If you look at Saudi Arabia, when they became 25%, the king ordered 120 diabetic foot centers to be opened up.
Mm-hmm.
We are at 20% and it's still going on the same thing. And you look at wound management per se, most of the health clinics, you'd be surprised, we just met quite a number of health clinics, they're actually just using normal saline and gauze, which is just water and cloth, which, you know, is quite distressing in the sense that even when we look at the ethics committee or when we speak to them, we say, why are they using substandard stuff? It's because they don't have the budget.
Mm-hmm.
That is why the society, even the last few weeks, we've been giving out wound care kits. We're giving out in Pahang, we're giving out in Selangor, and we're doing state by state to all the health clinics. So at least they have got some advanced wound management products and all that, which they can use to actually help.
Yep. As silly as this may sound, why isn't government doing anything about this? Why are we not opening up more foot centres?
Yeah, because if you look at the budgeting and also the staffing, also it's a problem. We're quite stretched at the Ministry of Health, see? So even at the ministry side, we have to actually come up with all these things, you will need additional budgets.
Mm-hmm. But then again, if you look at the long run and the sort of, you know, healthcare cost that you will incur from people going up to that stage of having limb loss. I mean, isn't that a lot more costly than establishing, you know, foot care centres?
Yeah, true. That's the reason why now they actually, are starting to support this. The Director General of Health, actually in his previous position, actually came out with a circular from the DG's office, which actually started the formation of wound care committees and wound care teams in about 134 hospitals. The Deputy DG for Public Health has gone one step ahead and actually even asked the health clinic with family medicine specialists to start actually doing a study on wound care to actually come out with a proper new policy or what, so at least they can present it to the Ministry of Finance. So they actually, now there is a movement involved, and there's one good thing about it is, like, we had the Asia Pacific Conference conference last year,
yeah,
and we're having the international conference this year. And this international conference is the first ever in Malaysia with 27 countries, and it's endorsed by the world body. So therefore, at least this will be an eye opener. People can come in, they learn more, they know about it, and they start practicing it.
Okay, we have a question here from someone via text message who says, "What about the accuracy of point of care glucose meters? This person says, I'm a diabetic myself, and I found that after my own research, that in 2009 in the US, a GDHPQQ enzyme caused falsely elevated results, which caused 13 deaths. Now, this makes monitoring difficult. Isn't the government supposed to regulate that? Have you encountered this before?"
Yeah, okay. Usually what we do is, we have got diabetic resource centers. And now if he's already bought a glucometer from a particular agent or even from a particular pharmacy or that, usually you must go for calibration.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, along the way, if you find that, you know, what I do in the hospital is, I make you bring your own meter and I check it with my meter in the hospital. Because okay, ours is calibrated. And what we have is, we have got volumetric assessments. That means when we put in the liquid or the reagent inside, it will give you an exact reading of the value itself. And we do that to go and check all our meters. So when that is sufficiently accurate, you find that the meter is well calibrated. So his meter has to be calibrated, because sometimes you find that he gets, when he's, let's say, hypo and thing, and is having sweating and all these things, mm-hmm, he might get a normal reading. But in fact, he knows he's already sweating, he's in a hypoglycemic condition, which means that meter has not been calibrated. Most people do what? They buy the meter and they keep it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they never send it back to be calibrated or to be checked. And it's always important, like what he has mentioned about what he called the reagents and all that, he has to always, upgrade himself, because the meters are changing every time. And you have new, what you call is gold electrodes and all that, which give you better readings.
Wow.
And the amount that you take also is lesser compared to before, less pain, you can check more times. So now you've got a lot of new meters coming in. And the easiest thing about this is, he can actually change the meters, because meters are given free. They usually make the money from the strips itself. So whatever he's using from whichever company it is, get the agent itself, you can switch. So upgrade. So you must do that often, and they will switch new meters for you, and you can get the new strips.
Fantastic. So we're discussing limb loss to diabetes, as well as proper wound care treatment, with Dr. Harikrishnan Nair. If you have a question for him, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Meera Sivasuthi. In our Health and Living segment today, Dr. Harikrishnan Nair, who is the President of the Malaysian Society of Wound Care Professionals in Malaysia, we're discussing limb loss to diabetes as well as proper wound care treatment. I think the alarming statistics by WHO on a worldwide scale, which says one foot gets chopped off. Well, according to Dr. Hari, it's been, the number has actually decreased. One foot gets chopped off every 20 seconds. Rather than 30 seconds, which was about 5 years ago, 2005, you said?
Yeah.
That's quite a long time ago. So, alarming indeed. But when an ulcer has developed, Dr. Hari, what are the immediate measures a patient should actually take?
Okay, usually when they have the ulcer itself, to note actually how much of X-ray is coming out. Is it, does it have a foul smell? Is there infection on board? So infection on board, you look at the redness, you basically look at fever, you look at pain,
mm-hmm.
So any of these things. So if you find that these things are there, you should bring to the doctor itself. However, if it's a small ulcer, you think it's a simple cut or anything or what, you can actually use cool boiled water, wash the wound, everything. But since you're a diabetic and you're in an immunocompromised state, it's always good to actually get a proper assessment.
To check it out. How crucial is early treatment?
Actually, it's the most crucial thing of all. Because if you can come in early, there is no effect. And the thing is, these ulcers heal very well. And we have got quite a number of wound care modalities which can be used. If you come late, it's already going into the tendons or into the bones. You have maybe bone infection, osteomyelitis and all that. And you have got ascending infection. I mean, the infection goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in these cases, it becomes a big problem. And some of them, actually, you'd be surprised. They come when it's already gangrenous. It's already black. And at that time, to do something, it takes a lot of things, and nothing much can be done. We usually amputate and then try to actually cut down the complication itself, so it doesn't actually go up further. So it's always good to actually come early. And the thing is, your sugar control has to be good. The way you assess yourself is important. So these things are important when you have an ulcer.
Yeah, how do ulcers lead to amputations?
Usually what happens is, when you have an ulcer, if it gets, number one is infection. So when there is infection, and the infection can be horrendously powerful nowadays,
mm-hmm.
You have got multi-resistant organisms and all that, and these organisms can actually start going in. So when they go in, they form sinuses, fistulas, you know, small holes in, they go through a tendon and they go up. And when you have got ulcers in the foot, that's the worst part, because you cannot actually gauge how much deep has it gone in, and does it affect your tendons or your bones or anything. You have to basically assess, and you have to probe, and you explore, you have to do your x-rays, your blood indices and all that. So that becomes a problem, number one. Number two, there is nowadays we find a lot of neuroischemic foot. That means there is decreased blood supply to the feet. So from what is about 10% has gone up at some cases up to about 40%. So when there is decreased blood supply and you don't actually do a bypass or something for the feet itself and revascularize the foot, what happens is the feet starts dying off because ischemia, no blood.
Mm-hmm.
So these ulcers, when it's ischemic ulcers, can be horrendously painful, and you find that, you know, it starts to track up and you have a full gangrene. And in that kind of cases, you have to amputate.
Right. What are people taught to do by the hospitals before they actually get discharged with regards to foot care?
Okay. Usually what you call is the best centers, usually what they do is they have a diabetic nurse educator.
Mm-hmm.
So diabetic nurse educator, usually we run a program whereby they spend 1.5 days with us for every 6 months when they do their post-basic in diabetes. So the post-basic school in Kedah will come down to our hospital to actually go through this thing, and we teach them for 1.5 days fully on foot assessment and also foot care. Now, before you get discharged, there's a few things you must do. Number one is basically look after feet. So you basically can give them what you call that lotions and all that, but some can be a bit more expensive, so they end up with either oils and all that. But you can use different forms of collagen lotions or even what you call this baby oils for that. Number two, your assessment, check your feet always. Number three, what you call this is make sure you have a proper insole. That means to offload the feet. Every person's feet is different. You cannot just go and buy one Kumf and say a size 8, everybody's size 8. No.
Mm-hmm.
Your feet, you might have a high arch, you might have a flat arch, you might have more pressure in some places, you might have deformities in the leg. So you have to get a proper insole. Now with the insole, you have to get a proper shoe. And shoe is not type A. I think most ladies like to wear type A, you know, with high heels 2.5 inches above and all these things. Also, you know, you need to actually look at the feet again. And you have to get, the shoes are expensive, yes, but they are comfortable. They actually offload your feet. So they have actually reduced the pressure on some of these areas. And so it actually cuts down the chances of getting an ulcer. Because when you have deformities and all that, like claw toes and all that, there's a very high chance, because the way you walk and the way the pressure is actually distributed, you end up having a lot of neuropathic ulcers. And these things can lead to a lot of problems.
Right. What do you tend to do wrong? What do most people tend to do wrong when they go home? And, you know, is it neglect that they don't look after the wound properly, or what are they doing wrong?
Yeah. Usually what happens is when they're with you, I mean, when and they leave you, out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, in that sense, they forget to look after their feet. They don't assess their feet. After a while, they say, oh, never mind, the food is okay, no problem. And then they forget about their sugars. All right, so just make sure your sugars goes up and down, ding dong everywhere, and then you find that their insoles, their proper footwear is not taken care of. After a while, they just end up using anything they can, and then just carry on life with that. And you know, even you're walking barefoot in the house, you have to be careful with that also, especially when you're a diabetic with kind of deformities and all that. You need to have a shoe in the house and a shoe outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
So in these kind of cases, you find that, you know, there is a lot of neglect, or basically they don't have any fear. When they come to us, we show them albums of feet being chopped off and everything else. But when they leave us, it's, as I said, out of sight, out of mind.
Why is that, Dr. Hari? Is it because, why are we so complacent? Because it's just not in Malaysia. When I was reading, it's all over the world. I mean, teenagers skip their diabetic clinics. Adults who think that, you know, they, because they feel all right, that they can just ignore their condition because it has no immediate physical effect. You know, they sort of go into denial. And then you start to have problems. And we're getting more and more younger people diagnosed with diabetes today because of our lifestyle.
True.
So if you had advice, I mean, what would you say to these people who, in controlling their sugar levels? I think that it goes back to that, really.
Yeah, I mean, we don't follow the cold turkey method.
Mm-hmm.
It's always in moderation. But the problem is, you know, in Malaysia, it's the only country in the world where we can eat for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You can find food for 24 hours. Even in Europe, at 5 o'clock, everything closes up. You only have your pubs and all that. You don't get food. Here, even at 3 o'clock, you can get nasi kandar, basically. And the same time, what you call this, is the only country where you can have sugar shortage. No other country on earth has ever come to that level yet. So you know the usage of sugar. So in that sense, all our products are sweetened. So they need to have actually cut it down in moderation. Rice is rice. Even though it's brown rice or whatever rice, yes, you take lesser once a day, one bowl basically. And then you take more vegetables and all that, you know. And even fruits, you take fruits that are, which are not too sweet. You have to control your lifestyle. And then exercise is important.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing is, if you look at Europe and also US, you've got a lot of places where you can go for a jog. Even in the office, you come up, you basically have a gym. You can actually bathe and take a shower and then change your clothes. In Malaysia, basically, if you go for a jog, you get knocked down or you get mugged, you know, or you get some acid sprayed on your face.
Not,
you know,
as that bad. That's an exaggeration. But we are lazy. We've just become very lazy.
Depending, yep. I think, but things
I
you
think
have
this excuse of, you know, crime rate or whatever. If there's a will, there's a way.
Thing is, because of not only the crime rate, I'm saying mentioning about the infrastructure, you should have actually a pathway basically for you to go and job. Because most of our infrastructure, you know, you don't have that particular thing. That's one. Number two is, I think there are enough gyms and all that which they can join.
Mm-hmm. Which are not cheap.
Yep.
You know, it depends on affordability.
It also depends on the employer itself. If you can actually have a gym in the building itself, it helps. So a lot of things can be done. So it's not only on the patient per se, but also on the, what do you call this, the employers and all that.
Right. I was reading some diabetes experts have done some survey and they said that by lowering blood pressure, cholesterol and glucose actually cuts the complications from the whole condition of that leads to limb amputation. It sounds very common, like common sense, but do you want to elaborate on that, lowering your blood pressure and cholesterol as well?
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, you know, if you have diabetes, a multi-organ disease yourself, usually blood pressure will come because, you know, sugar actually hardens the vessels, which causes arteriosclerosis and all that. That will increase the peripheral resistance, causing the pressure to go up. Now, when you control your pressures, you actually cut down the risk of actually getting strokes and heart attacks and all that together with cholesterol. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, to actually control all of this, you have to take low salt, you have to take low oils. Yeah, basically, you have to use, like, you know, canola oil and all these things one time only. If you eat outside, basically, you know, the oil is reused again multiple times, and cheaper oils and all that, which has higher levels of content of oil. And then you find that the food per se, so all this has to be controlled. So it's easier said than done. But basically, if you actually modify your diet and you exercise well, you should be able to keep it at bay for some time.
Mm-hmm. For some people can't keep it at bay. And what do they do then?
They have to basically control themselves. So now, basically, if you have the disease, you must get good control. The HbA1c or the glycosylated hemoglobin that we actually check for 3 months should be below 6.5.
Right.
That means it's well controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to actually go to that extent. And they need to actually start finding something. They need to know more. The thing is about the government per se now, what the ministry and the society is trying to do is to actually empower them. That empowering is the problem now, because the thing is, if they are empowered, they know their condition is easy. You come and spar with us, not I tell you and say, please, this is gospel truth or whatever, you do this.
Mm-hmm.
No, you must tell us, okay, this is the way I am, what can I do? This is my type of staple food, we follow them. Okay, you control this way. So dietitians have one-to-one, they even have group sessions, you have to bring your spouse over. So a lot of things are available, but the thing is, they have to actually choose to want to cut down. You'll be surprised, even doctors, some doctors don't actually control. Even though they are diabetic, you know, they have got blurring of vision, all these things, they still don't control. Every day, 3 times a day, food is there. They send their staff to buy food and all that, they still eat. So they themselves don't control. So that's the problem with this thing. People have become complacent in the sense, like, you know, they don't actually think that this disease is a big problem. But in actual fact, it causes a lot of morbidity.
It does. It does indeed, for sure. And in fact, I was reading someone who had her limbs amputated. She said diabetes is a condition that has to be respected, otherwise the implications are horrendous.
Yes.
And that's something I think if you are indeed diabetic, you know, you may want to take that on board. How common are skin disorders in diabetics?
It's quite common. It's actually known as dermopathy, in terms that, you know, because now you're immunocompromised, so you get all forms of infection. So number one, what you call is, because of the neuropathy, you have dry skins. You actually end up having fissures. You can have calluses, which is hardened skin. Mm-hmm. You can have small patches all over the place. You can have hyperpigmented skin. You can get infection, like fungal infection, bacterial infections. You can have a lot of satellite lesions and all that, you know. So a lot of things actually affect the feet itself, and more pressure areas on that area itself. And when you have all this, it's a very common thing to have. Okay. And sometimes it's very easy for you to detect a diabetic patient by just looking at the feet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you must be a professional at it. One look.
Looking at many feet.
Can you tell if one is actually diabetic? As in, when one look, what do you see? What are you looking at? That
okay, if you look at the
tells
feet,
you one is diabetic.
The first thing when we do foot assessment is look at the inspection itself. So you look at inspection itself. You want to basically look at the feet, which is very dry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's loss of hair. You know, so all that.
There's loss of hair.
Loss of hair.
Okay,
and you can, there's not much of sweating also. It's very dry, and you can have what you call it, cuts at the heel areas. You can have small hardened skin, which is callosities and all that.
Right.
You can have multiple lesions where they, you know, they're like gone for war or something. You know, black patches all over to show that there was some infection before. Mm-hmm. They call it furuncles. They have can have boils. They can have fungal infections and all that. And all this will be hyperpigmented. They become like stained, darkened and all that. So very easily you can see the feet itself. So you know something is going on there. It's dermopathic changes and all that. And that's when we usually ask them, okay, can we please check your diabetes? Because 50% of diabetics have got no symptoms at all.
Okay. And traditionally, what was used to treat ulcers and things like that. In terms of wound management, traditionally, what do we use?
Okay, previously they used to use herbs, they used to use leaves, poultices, if the mater used to bring. They used to use honey, but honey is still being used now, continuously. We've got a lot of products with honey also. And then they used to use a lot of, cool boiled water. They would put all kinds of homemade remedies and all that on the feet and all that, which sometimes makes it even worse. Because you cannot assess whether there's any granulation tissue, whether an epithelial tissue or anything, whether there's any slough, pus or anything, it's a better problem. So traditionally, they were using all this before. So now we have got much more advanced, more moisture-retentive dressings now that which help.
Okay. And I understand you've done some work with collagen and glycerin. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, this actually is from US. This particular product has, there's a lot of collagens in the market itself. But Stimulon per se is a collagen with glycerin. That's why I can use the name Stimulon itself. Mm-hmm. Because the other products have only collagen, nothing inside. It's only pure collagen itself, and we do use them also. But this particular product, collagen and glycerin, the glycerin inside actually is a surfactant. It actually helps to moisturize, it helps to absorb the, what do you call this, a bit of the X-ray management and all that. But mainly, you find that it cleanses and also, what do you call this, moisturizes the wound, and the collagen inside kickstarts healing. Because you find that the collagen actually is required in the proliferative stage, in wound healing itself. Mm-hmm. They call it the fibroblastic phase, where you need a lot of collagen. And our body, especially diabetics, they have got diminished collagen rates in their skin and all that. So this actually helps. And then there's a few things. One is for wound care, one is diabetic care. Diabetic foot care is basically, like I told you before, the collagen with in forms of lotions,
yep,
where they can apply for their feet, everything, and prevent this kind of breaks, maintain the moisture so it's not too dry, there's no cracking and all these things. So, you know, it has good findings.
Findings, all right. Earlier on when we spoke about setting up, you know, foot care clinics and things like that, you mentioned that, you know, we need more, we lack the personnel. We mm-hmm. lack the number of people to man these clinics. But we've got a text message here who's from someone who says, we always say that we have a bloated civil service, and now we hear that we don't have enough staff, you know, to do this sort of work. I mean, what is the real situation?
Okay, if you
is
look
it
at
training,
if you look at the Ministry of Health itself, we need actually trained personnel. You can't just put a nurse there and say, please look after your diabetic foot. Mm-hmm. Now that particular nurse has to be trained to assess, to basically diagnose, to classify, and then to manage, and also to go further on when to refer. So she needs to know about proper, what you call, foot assessment in terms of pure diabetic patients, and then look at whether ulcers have already developed, and what should you do for the ulcer? Do you manage it? Do you send it over to the doctors? What do you use? Do you use what kind of products? Something from US, something from Australia, this and that. They need to be trained. That's why we actually embark on this program where we've got 134 hospitals on one side with 900 over health clinics the other side, and these clinics are all using water and gauze. Mm-hmm. Namaste and gauze. So they don't actually use much of other things. So we need to go and train and educate them. At least, you know, you must have proper wound care, proper diabetic foot care. So
do you think mobile diabetic clinics would help?
In a way, yes, because that's the reason why we're actually giving out kits. The wound care kit now, it's a bag like the antenatal kits and all that. Mm-hmm. And those health clinics who are having nurses going for their home nursing can actually carry these kits and go to the homes. And they've got lots of products inside there. I mean, silver, hydrocolloids, alginates, collagen, everything else. So they can manage the wounds at home. Mm-hmm. Because some patients, especially those with pressure ulcers, those with diabetic foot and all that, don't move. They're always in the home. And then when you go and assess, you actually can actually train them and also treat them at home. So this is one way of going. Outlier programs where you actually can go to the community itself and try to help out.
Okay. How do you think change will begin to take place when it comes to changing wound care management programs?
Okay. At the moment, we find that training and education, that is the most important thing. That is the reason why even the World Union itself is actually supporting Malaysia in the sense that they are endorsing the society. They are certifying the society also. So at least we can actually start certification programs, mm-hmm. and we can empower people to actually know how to assess, what to do, when to refer, how to manage these cases, how to prevent limb loss, how to prevent complications. So the end of the day is basically you empower the care professionals or even the care workers, you empower the patient, and the family rights is very important. So if all of them know, then they will know when to seek treatment from you, how to seek treatment early, and when you actually, what you call this, require to be seen by a trained professional.
Okay, when did the Malaysian Society of Wound Care Professionals come about?
Okay, we actually formed the society in 2011. All we right. had some time, a few years before that. We applied and finally we had, because not many people are actually doing wound care, mm-hmm. even though different subspecialties are doing it, but now our plan is actually get a multidisciplinary teams in every single hospital health clinic to actually start managing these patients. So we work together, in other sense.
Okay, so do you think you've been making some headway since 2011?
Oh yes, because in 2012 we had the Asia Pacific Conference here, and we were the founding country itself, and it's moved to Indonesia this year. Next year is Philippines. So I'm going as a founding president for the society and for the Asia Pacific Conference, as one. Number two, we've already moved from the Asia Pacific to the international conference this year. We are actually proclaiming World Wound Care Week in Malaysia. World Wound Care Day, which is on the 18th of October, is also St. Luke's Day, which is a patron saint of medicine, also in Malaysia. Plus, we're also coming up with the MOU, Society with the World Union, and teams are from the World Union, from the Academy of Wound Technology, the Asian Academy of Wound Technology, and all the presidents of the Asia-Pacific societies for wounds, for diabetic limbs, and everything else are coming to Malaysia this year.
Okay. So, I mean, you can connect with the whole world. Mm. How do you, will you connect with government?
At the moment, one
thing is the most crucial thing, really.
Yes, but the good thing is, I must say that the advisors of societies are the, what do you call this, we have got people in the government itself. Like, because this program for wound care itself comes under the medical side. And we have the Deputy Director General of Health for Medical, and also Deputy Director General of Health for Public Health, who are very supportive. They actually have come, they have, opened the conferences. They have supported by giving support in their health departments and also in the hospitals and all that. So these two are quite instrumental in this, our approach itself.
Okay. Dr. Hari, I mean, what would you like to leave me with on the whole subject of limb loss to diabetes, and as well as proper wound care management?
Okay. Most importantly is, number one, know your disease. Check all the complications. Make sure you check your feet. That is the most important. And if possible, get the best wound care that you can get. And always be well endowed with every form of information you can get. Correct information, that is.
Okay. How do we get in touch with you at the society? Is there a website?
Yep. www.mswcp.org.
Okay. Sure. That's mswcp.org. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Mira.
That was Dr. Harikrishna Nair, President of the Malaysian Society of Wound Care Professionals in Malaysia, on limb loss to diabetes and proper wound care treatment on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.